listening to The Seventh Reel. This week, Elvis, a 2022 film directed by Baz Luhrmann. This was my pick. Well, I picked it because I liked it, and I'm a big Baz Luhrmann defender, even though I don't like most of his all of his movies, but I really, really respect his style. So, and when I saw this in the theater, I was kind of floored.
Why were you floored?
What did you guys think? I thought it's fun. It's so fun to see a director be so maximalist, but still be very intent and still have like so much intent behind all that glitz and glamour. And I think his style really translates well to covering the life of Elvis. I can't think of another director, to be honest, who would be more suited to do an Elvis biopic.
100 other people. I'm sorry. Hated this movie.
All right. It's terrible. Okay, tell me why.
Well, I'll let Michelle go first, because if I start, I'm not going to stop. It's just going to
be... Okay. It's just going to be the use of wrench.
Yeah. It's terrible.
All right.
I like it. I think it's fun. I think they don't do a great job of Priscilla.
Mm-hmm. That's very true.
With her, but they don't include any of that. But yeah, I think like framing it from Tom Hanks's perspective is a good choice.
Mm.
It could like easily not work, but
I thought Tom Hanks gave it his all.
Yeah,
I haven't seen him this animated since Cloud Atlas, and I think it was pretty good. Okay, Yusuf, now it's your turn. Go on.
Okay,
go on.
Well,
open the floodgates.
Why is it set? It's from Tom Hanks's Colonel Tom Parker's perspective, and yet he is still the villain. Like he's like, is this objectively Elvis's? Like, who's telling the story? I don't get that. Like, he's like, but he was, of course, fine. And then he's collapsing. And it's like, well, why would he tell us this if it's from his point of view? That's number one. Number two, feels like a little too easy to be like, Elvis was just, a lost soul. He just wanted to be a superhero and blah, blah, blah. And this guy took advantage of him. That seems ridiculous. I'm pretty sure this was just a guy who got famous and wanted to be famous and liked it and indulged in everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, why are we pretending that he was this angel? And then it was just like a Dewey Cox or whatever, Walk Hard.
Yes,
like,
it
that
is
was
Dewey
just
Cox.
It. Like, the entire movie, you're just watching it. It's like, so they're not even pretending that movie doesn't exist. Like, it's kind of jarring.
Yes.
It's almost like
it plays it completely straight. It's like a Dewey Cox movie where there's no jokes.
Yeah, like you watch that movie and I was like, you know what would be great is a sincere version of this. not understanding that they were like, I don't know.
Maybe making fun of the structure of biopics.
Yeah, which is fine. The guy though was amazing. I didn't think he would be great.
Yes, he was amazing. I completely bought him as Elvis. He disappeared into the character within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And even though he doesn't really look like him, there is one thing he captures very well. The kind of the boyish charm in his eyes.
Yeah.
I think like was nailed perfectly. So when he starts singing, going back to your point about like he's just being like this, the film frames him as this guy who's just desperate. I think it doesn't really frame him as an angel, but it frames him as just this guy who's desperate for love. Desperate for a connection, and he realizes like his music and doing the dancing is like his one method of gaining that. So he kind of just throws himself completely into it, and which inevitably gives way to him being exploited.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is a film that's obsessed with the way we look, we perceive, and view Elvis. That's why the editing is always done through the newspapers, the footage, like it's almost seamless blend of actual stock concert footage into his like it's so obsessed with the way
cool.
we perceive up I thought that was like the like entire it's all about
I mean the concert footage being so like real, like it feels like it's it's like where technology's gotten so good that it's kind of like insane, like
you can't tell and even at the very end when it's you see actual Elvis sing Unchained Melody, they still add in these little insert shots. But that sells it completely. But yeah, it is. I can't disagree that this is just Dewey Cox, but without any of the jokes. But I thought, like, just the idea of, like, how do we even perceive this guy? Is he, they almost make him out to be the, it does make him out to look like a superhero. It makes him out to be a god. But that's kind of how we want to see him and how we kind of remember him. I think he intentionally holds us at arm's length from truly knowing him, because we can't truly know him. I don't know. And I thought the last shot of him, I think that's all, like kind of symbolized with the last shot of movie Elvis. Like, they don't show him dying or anything, but they do show him entering a plane and flying off into the sky. We don't know him forever to disappear into the arms of God for something that we can't never truly understand. He's like a flash in the pan. He died at 42.
His
talent just
they
gone.
Skip the coolest parts, like the parts where he got fat and was doing that should have been 80% of the movie. That's what I wanted to see. And then they just, like, gave us this last shot where he was fat and singing Unchained Melody. That was... I got so angry at that. I wanted more.
Why were you so angry? Because you wanted more of that, yeah.
I wanted more of that. I didn't care about him being affected by racism. Being like, oh, racism is bad.
It has everything to do with us.
Yeah, I didn't care about that. And... yeah, so I thought it would be more cooler if it was this guy just self-destructing at the peak of
his.
Yeah.
That would have been a much tighter, more focused movie.
Well, because this is very much a victim, like, narrative for Elvis.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which, yeah, I think you're right. And, like, he doesn't. I doubt he'd like this that much.
Yeah.
If he watched it, because it's, like, not portraying him that well. I think there's something with Baz Luhrmann that, like, you see in, like, Romeo and Juliet and The Great Gatsby, where it's, like, there's this top layer that is, like, the glitz and the glamour and the spectacle.
Mm.
And then there's so much more going on underneath that sometimes you can miss it because there's so much going on top.
Mm.
But I don't know.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's, to be fair, I watched it, you know, this is on TV at home, so it's a very superficial watch. Plus, it's just so quick and everything's happening so fast. Like, you can't even watch it at 1.5 speed or whatever because
it's already going at 1.5 speed.
So that's kind of, I guess, maybe the cause. Like, if I'd watch it again, I'm sure I'd pick up on certain elements that, like, I'm sure some thought was put into it. But yeah, I just don't like
it. Did you like the stuff with his mom? I thought it was so sad.
No.
Like, they set off from the very beginning that she'd already lost, like, his twin brother, and she's holding on to him, like, as her last bastion of, like, survive, like, just even staying alive. Because the moment he's gone, the moment he's in an army, she's gone. Like, I thought that was so sad. And when she sees how the women are reacting to him, it's like, oh my God, they're going to take him away from me. Like, his gift is what is going to, like, take my boy away.
Yeah, but that stuff is all, like, just, I guess I want it to be something else. Like, it's good for what it is. It's a good, like, 2-hour summary or 2-hour and 40 minutes summary.
More
of
40 minutes. It's very
long. Of Elvis, which is just cliff notes from his life. So it's good as that. But I was like, okay, and now she did this, and now she's stumbling, now she's a drunk, and now she's dead. And then now his dad is, it just felt like it was
Has to happen. Beats. It feels obligatory that these things have to happen.
Yeah, and it was just like plot points, like, just like, okay, here are 5 plot points. Like, you could take the story of his mother going, you know, being sad and make that into a movie, and then the father being, you know, this hapless manager into a movie. You could take just one scene, about the Elvis comeback special and make that into a movie. There's so much in there.
There's so many moments that can just be a movie. You're absolutely right in the comeback special being, that would be an amazing point if it's like, you show him being, like, he's being commodified and this is like his chance to return to form. That would have been great. But I thought that was done very powerfully. I thought the If I Can Dream sequence.
Yeah,
first of all, they mimicked it perfectly, but that was really cool. And again, like, the way it's all about the way we perceive him, because you see him on magazines, you see him in films, you see, like, the film shows all the ways that we have perceived him. And I thought it was very sad, and it ultimately makes me really like him, was that his one big regret, like, him thinking that he won't be remembered, is because he never made a great movie. Like, that was genuinely what he was caught up over. He wanted to be an actor, but he felt like, you know, he was never in a good movie. It was just like, oh, okay, dude. You're a film guy. I get it. Like, he just wanted to make something good.
He wanted to be James Dean.
He wants to be James Dean. That's what he actually wants to do. And because I was listening to, like, the Austin Butler's, like, in one of his interviews. He was on Hot Ones just a couple of days ago, right after we watched it. Mm-hmm. And he was actually just talking about, like, how Elvis genuinely believed that he was going to be forgotten. Like, he's dead set on that. And how sad that was.
It kind of makes sense for him to think, like, he was doing the same show in Las Vegas for years. Mm. Like, I don't know if he was still coming out with new songs at that point or not, but...
No,
it makes sense why you would think that.
I think my dad told me this story, but I'm not sure it's true. But it was about how Elvis, you know, at one point just left his handlers and started walking around somewhere, some city they were touring, and then went into a record store, and he was so fat and different that they didn't recognize him. And he was like, "Where's all the Elvis stuff?" And they told him, like, "That shit doesn't sell anymore. It's somewhere in the back." And they had all the new bands, like, you know, Stones and stuff out. And
the Stones.
And he was like, I'll get it. And then he left. All right, mama, I'm going to go.
All right. I'm going to go. Wait, sir, are you? Please. I believe that. I genuinely think that he... It's ultimately a tragedy.
Sounds like, right? It's a celebration. Apocryphal story. It's not like... Maybe it's not real.
Well, I like the idea, but going back to the idea, was he actually exploited? Because I think Tom Hanks makes a really good point when he goes, like, we did this to each other. Like, I took advantage of you, but scratch my eye, scratch yours. Like, this is how I got you this far. You wouldn't have been here, gotten this, like, at this position if I didn't do what I do. And now, like...
I mean, I never understood all the stuff where, like, they show these black artists singing their songs, and then the Elvis songs that we know, but obviously he got it from them, but it's like, that's fine?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't get that.
Yeah, I didn't love the idea that they portrayed other black artists being like, yeah, it's fine, Elvis, we're all pals here. Go out and sing the song. And I'm sure part of that was like, look at this fucking asshole who's taking advantage of our music and going and making way more money. Like, it's not...
Way more money.
Yeah. Maybe they were friends, I don't know. But I'm still kind of mad that there's no portrayal of... There's resentment there, you know? Mm. There had to have been.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I feel like he himself was very passionate about, like, African-American music. Like, the movie kind of makes a point that this was his, like, one major inspiration. Mm-hmm. Was the gospel, was, like, the blues, gospel music, that's where he got his start. I think it's important that they do showcase how important, how formulative that is for him as an artist.
It is, but there's also, like, no sort of acknowledgement.
Mm.
I don't know.
Maybe, like, that's what they were trying to get at with him being caring about civil rights, like the civil rights movement.
Yeah. They were really into that.
There. It's very funny, though, like, when it's like, oh, Bobby Kennedy got shot and the movie suddenly got so serious. It became almost comical. That's the most Dewey Cox part. It's like, oh, so this happened. Okay.
It's like, we gotta watch Elvis. We're not going back to the studio. No.
He's like, no. Watch. This is important. So
but yeah, then it heightens his, you know, paranoia, and he's like, oh, all these people are dying, and he can't.
And he feels so like that he's makes
sense.
Mm.
I thought that was what they were doing. It was like, oh, we're gonna plant that seed, so then the audience would be like, oh, it's justified that he's so worried and he doesn't want to go on an international tour and stuff.
What did you think about the way they use his music in this? I really like the way they incorporate his actual, like, songs into the movie. It goes what I call the Rocket Man treatment. It's like, it doesn't matter when what year the song comes out. It matters if it thematically resonates with what's happening in the story right now. And the way they kind of reinvent Suspicious Minds as, like, his paranoia, and the Hikens were caught in a trap, and like he's literally caught in a trap. It's very obvious, but still, I think it really worked. It really heightened the drama of the situation, because this is his art, and his art is kind of what dooms him in the end.
That was kind of cool, yeah, I guess.
And the beginning, when they transitioned from the 2001 Space Odyssey theme into his American trilogy, I thought was so cool. I'm sorry, that stuck. It happened in the first 2 minutes of the movie, and I kind of was on board completely after that, because I just thought that idea was so sick. What did you think about Tom Hanks's character? Like, why view it through the Colonel? Because he's talking to you, the audience, throughout the entire movie. He's like, you want to see this. You want to see this. Through this entire narration is framed as him kind of trying to imply that the audience, his fans, are complicit in his destruction. You're the one. He wanted love from you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just how he just...
Yeah, on one hand, he's trying to deflect responsibility, right? He doesn't believe that. But at the same time, there is a kernel of truth in it, because you see the way that people react to him.
Kernel of truth.
Like, they never... Yes.
I thought you were doing that on purpose. I don't...
No. Thank you. That's great. It's like the Cineplex popcorn. Kernel. I love that. Whenever they say that, I laugh in the theater.
Oh my God.
I love that. Whenever they say it, I laugh. Colonel, yes, of course. What do you think? What do you think Baz Luhrmann is trying to say with that? Because it's all intent. Like, why is he trying to communicate, trying to involve the audience into this?
It's also just like commercial greed.
Mm.
But I don't know. I think involving the audience is like a. Because they create the career. They create everything.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's like, they could have gone that, like, the fans made him paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
Being followed all the time, being bothered all the time. They could have gone with that narrative, but it wasn't, because it was like, his manager was lying. His father was taking his money. And kind of everyone was taking his money. I don't know, I'm going.
I think what he's trying to say that is that when we see something that is so spectacular, something that is so magical, we kind of lose our senses, and we want the magic to keep going, but no matter what, at any cost, because we love him. Why wouldn't he keep doing this?
He wants that. Like, Elvis wants that,
exactly. It's like,
because that's his career. That's what he enjoys doing. There's like a double-ended sword with whatever you comment on fans and artists' relationship.
And very purposeful to end the movie on Unchained Melody.
Mm-hmm.
I need your Godspeed, your love to me. That's his plea to you watching. I thought that was so sad. I just like, what I liked the movie was like how tragic it all seemed at the end. All the glitz and glamour, but at the end, it's just the light fading. Just, that's it. He's gone. He's 40, like, flash in the pan. We'll never have another one like him. Yeah, that's why I liked it so much. What do you think about the modern needle drops? Did you recognize Jack White's voice in one of the songs?
Yes, I did. And
cool.
Cardi B's on the soundtrack.
Doja Cat's on the soundtrack.
I don't know which one is which, so.
It's when he goes on Beale Street for the first time.
Yeah, so that's not Cardi B, I guess.
That's not Cardi B, yeah. The Hound Dog remix for Vegas is Doja Cat.
Doja Cat. I'm sure he would love that.
Actually, the Jack White thing I want to bring up is because in the visual album on Spotify, Baz Luhrmann was saying how the Colonel never let Elvis do... a duet or just collaboration. So the idea of bringing Jack White in to do like that song together, Power of My Love, was like his Luhrmann's attempt to realize Elvis's dream, because Elvis did want, he said, according to him, Elvis did want to do collaboration, but he was never allowed. So this is their chance.
My God, Jack White is from the White Stripes.
Yes. Oh my God. He's the Seven Nations Army guy.
I don't think Jack White would get along with Elvis.
No.
It would be like...
He did play Elvis in Dewey Cox.
That's a good... Oh my God, yeah.
He played Elvis in Dewey Cox.
Okay, this has to be intentional. Karate. Man. This
he has to be intentional at that point.
He had to have been like, you know what? I'm going to make this movie about Elvis, and it's going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be ridiculous.
That's what I think. did.
So apparently Austin Butler had to go back to a vocal coach to get rid of his Elvis voice, which is that so is, fun
no, me. That's just, he's probably making that up.
You're probably making it up because he kept doing it like throughout this entire year, even after the movie came out. I guess because of his award season, like he just thought.
Voice to do. I kept doing it.
It's a fun voice.
I just kept doing it and then saying "mama" at the end.
I kept annoying Michelle with it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Like, it's so fun. Like, why wouldn't you? If I can do it, like, if you do it accurately, why stop?
Yeah.
Why tap the brakes? All right. Shall we take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Alright. And we're back! Now let's step right up. Seven reels, let's rank them up.
I'm gonna go with one.
Isn't that a little too harsh?
I don't care, I won't stand for it.
You won't stand for it.
Do 5.5.
5.5.
Okay.
I do 6 because I love the music. I love it. If I ever get the chance to edit a movie, I want it to be like this as well.
You're going to be doing that. Okay.
Okay. And so now we're going to talk about what we've been watching this week. Mm-hmm. Have we watched anything this week?
What did I watch? I watched that movie, Greed, the Steve Coogan movie.
Oh, yes. How was it?
It was good. It was decent, to be honest. It's not like super cool. Some of it's interesting, some of it's funny. That's it.
We forgot to mention we watched Living with Bill Nye. Did we talk about it last time?
No, I don't think so.
We watched the Bill Nye movie, Living, which I didn't know until like 10 minutes going in, like not really, the day before, that it's a remake of Kurosawa's Living. And then say one thing, it really made me want to watch the original. That's what I'll say, that's about the movie.
You're not
going to
talk about Plane.
Oh, there's not really much to talk about that movie. We watched Plane.
Wait, how was it? It's dumb.
It's
but
dirty,
not
huh?
like fun even.
It's dumb, but it's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun. It has a very workman-like style. It's
except the ending's so stupid.
When
he's shot and then he has to take a moment to have a little cry, sit on his plane on his own while he's bleeding to death, and be like, "Yes, I survived." And then they have to just dwell on it. And he's dying. Why don't they do something? It's so stupid.
The Rotten Tomatoes, like, thing when comment is right, is that it's just a few rungs above straight to DVD, but still, like, it has its charms. Gerald Butler, it's fun to see. Yeah, I think he's finally, it's fun to see him in a movie where he's not the main, like, badass guy. Like, he really is just a plane pilot in this, which I thought was great. I was like, wow, it actually... He doesn't turn into a straight up action hero. That's cool.
That's kind of interesting. But is he still like super muscular?
Yeah, he's still Gerald Butler. But I think ultimately the action, the plane stuff, everything on the plane was really good. The plane crashing, then trying to land, like them running to a situation. It really feels like an extended version of the crash scene in Sully, because they're trying to remain professional and trying to find a solution. But the moment the action stuff starts happening, it just becomes... I was like, oh, I've seen this before. Like, they could have shot this in a more interesting way, but whatever. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that brings us to what our recommendations are.
Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap. That's that's my recommendation. That's
my
better than this movie.
My recommendation is Pop Star. Never Stop. Like,
that's a good one too.
It's the spiritual successor to This Is Spinal Tap. One of the best comedies to come out in the last, like, in the 2010s.
Yeah, it's kind of slept on. I
slept on. There's a joke. There's one amazing joke every minute. It really is. And at one point, Maya Rudolph said the N-word. It's just...
Yeah.
You know what? It's like, what with the hard R? That's so funny. We need to watch it soon. I just remember. And it'll make you never take. It also won't make you take Elvis seriously, because again, like, Dewey Cox makes fun of the biopic structure. it's an amazing movie, and all the songs are so good. so good.
Yeah, they're actually catchy. Yeah.
They're actually catchy. Andy Samberg is so funny. I wish like the late he gets to make another movie. The, him and the Lonely Island like guys like they should have got another shot. Too bad
this. I hope so. It didn't do too well. And
it didn't do too well.
The movie before it was Hot Rod, and that did even worse.
That did even worse. Yeah. All right, Michelle. Did you have a recommendation? Did you already say?
I haven't said it. No. Mine is The Great Gatsby. I really like it. I know it makes sense that people don't, because it's like combining whatever the music is, Kanye West with 20s stuff. But I liked it, and it's a terrible adaptation of the book, but I still think it works.
I love how you acknowledge that it's a terrible adaptation.
They completely changed the ending. I'm gonna
try rewatching that.
DiCaprio's really good in it.
We should do an episode on it. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we
could. Carey Mulligan is in it. I love Carey Mulligan. All right. Well, that brings us to what we'll be watching next week. Michelle, it's your turn to pick.
Yes. We're going to watch some Jane Campion and watch, I think, one of her first, if not her first, film, An Angel at My Table.
All right.
Another biopic, but nowhere near as fun.
Oh, you're telling me that doesn't have, like, turn into a comic book panel at points? Okay. All right. Well, we'll see you all next week at this table. Join us at this table. Keep it real.
It's a terrible joke.
I know. I didn't know where I was going with that. All right. See you guys.
Bye.
The Seventh Reel is hosted by Arvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf El-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim. And our outro music is composed by Yahya El-Bashir. Thanks for listening.